Jalisco, 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 to Tenes, to Novia, me Guadalajara. Muchacha bonita, la perla es más raja, en todo Jalisco es me Guadalajara.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And my name is Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to Sunday. Let's see, it's February the 24th. It's heading up toward that magical February 29th day, the day that only comes around every 4 years or so.
Yeah, so we've got a leap week ahead of us, and hopefully,
we did Sadie Hawkins Day dances. Did you ever do those?
We did, yes. Had good times.
Yeah. It was the one time that it was appropriate for a girl to ask a guy out.
Yeah, times have changed just a little bit since then.
They've changed way too much since then. Oh, well.
Welcome, and get ready for an hour as we take a whirlwind tour of things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks here. The last two shows we've done have been interview programs, and we're very thankful to have had the opportunity to talk with Dr. Jerome Corsi and Russ Dizdar, but of course, we do like the opportunity we have to kind of look at the news from our own unique perspective, and we're going to do that for the next hour or so, because there have been an awful lot of things happening in the world that we just haven't had a chance to comment on for a few
weeks. The world's just been full of news.
It's gone mad.
It has. You never know it if you watch CNN and Fox News.
No,
because it's all McCain, Obama, and Clinton.
That's right. There was a brief timeout when the tragic shooting took place at Northern Illinois University.
Barely a timeout.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't like the round the clock coverage that happened when
during the Virginia Tech shooting.
Yeah. And we're certainly not getting into quantity of or anything like that. Trying to compare or contrast, but our point is that. The gravity of the situation seemed to me would have dictated a little more coverage than what it got, because the networks seemed very loath to divert away from the ongoing ballot bowl, or whatever sports metaphor they want to use to describe the presidential race this week.
Or you decide 2008,
yeah,
like we have some sort of decision we're really making, and that Diebold hasn't decided it for us.
Exactly right. You know, who would have thought, looking at John McCain last year as the co-sponsor of the McCain-Kennedy Amnesty for Illegals bill that they tried to ram through Congress, that he would emerge as the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. Republicans, especially true conservatives, but Republicans as well, were just outraged at this injustice that was trying to be forced on the American public.
It was amazing. And it amazes me that so many people seem to be forgetting, at least people that are pundits who are asked to come on television and pontificate about Saint McCain. And, oh, he's such an honest guy. Why would he ever do something like that with lobbyists? Well, hello. Let's talk about Vietnam days. Let's talk about Songbird McCain.
Yeah, which is a nickname applied to him by some of the veterans who were also POWs during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there is a group, and you'll find this YouTube video posted at peeringintodarkness.com. Guys who are very upset, at least as upset, if not more so, that John McCain is going to be his party's nominee for president, as the veterans of the Swift Boat crews were in 2004 at John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
And
I will be very disappointed if that doesn't make the mainstream media sometime during this campaign.
It certainly will. Once we get to the, past the conventions, and presuming that this incident, this story about Vicky Eisman, the lobbyist who McCain staffers thought had a too friendly relationship with the senator, doesn't derail his candidacy before then. I don't think at this point in the game that the Republican Party is going to step back and say, oh, we made a mistake.
Maybe. I don't think it will. And you and I have talked about this. The New York Times came out in January and endorsed John McCain.
Right.
They had been sitting on that story since well before December.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spun out there at a time when it's going to do the least amount of harm.
Right.
Spun out there in a way with very little, you know, people going on the record. There's only one gentleman who actually was named. Mm-hmm. The rest were anonymous sources. It made the story sound fictitious.
And there are four reporters for the New York Times whose names are attached to this story. One would assume, or one would hope anyway, although you can never tell in the light of the revelations that have come out over the last couple of years of the reporters for the Times who basically invented stories, but you would hope anyway that these four checked out their sources and were pretty confident in the story before going with it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Times only ran the story apparently because it was about to be leaked by other news sources. So, but you're right. It is hitting at a time when it's going to do the least amount of political damage to John McCain. By the time the convention rolls around and passes, this will be a non-story anymore. The American mm-hmm. public, we have a very short memory. Again, thinking about John McCain's chances for the presidency last summer after the McCain-Kennedy immigration reform bill, I thought for sure his campaign was toast.
You know, I agree with that. And since you said the name Ted Kennedy, I have to say, you know, when we record these shows, we simply start up and we record, you know, the interview or, you know, the blather, whatever it happens to be for the week. And then later on, Derek goes in post-op, so to speak, and he puts together, you know, the front part, the beginning and the end, you know, the intro mm-hmm. and the outro. And he hasn't put the intro in yet, but I'm hoping he'll be able to use
oh, yeah.
Ted Kennedy stuff I said.
Oh,
him.
Yeah. You'll have heard. Yes, we should have made a note at the beginning of the program. That was the singing voice, if you want to call it that, of Ted Kennedy.
Well, you'll be sure to put that on there. So in case you're wondering who that was,
yeah,
that was Senor Kennedy.
Addressing the faithful, serenading the faithful in Laredo.
Gosh.
Texas. Well, Sharon posted an interesting analysis at Peering into Darkness News. And if you're not logging in and reading that on a daily basis, I really encourage you to do it because it's a collection of news stories that are either underreported or just not reported, really, by the major media. Stories that kind of get buried in the inside pages, if you will.
And honestly, they do come from my viewpoint. I'm the editor. I choose what goes in there
right.
and what doesn't go in there. And I try to put just about a dozen stories up every day. So
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be comprehensive, but I try to pick out stories, as you say, that the mainstream media is just kind of not reporting.
Yes, because we consider the mainstream media fairly unbalanced.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Unfairly unbalanced.
Yeah. There's a story. You may have heard about this, actually. Representative Renzi of Arizona, and I've forgotten his first name now, even though I'm looking at the story here. He was a congressman who served three terms from Arizona, arrested, charged with like three dozen counts of wire fraud and this, that, and the other. Sharon connected a couple of dots here, which are worth just tossing out there for your consideration. The assistant to Congressman Renzi, Patty Rowe, was basically in charge of raising a lot of campaign money for the congressman. Her husband, Jason Rowe, used to work for Tom DeLay, now disgraced.
And
former
for Tom Feeney.
And for Tom Feeney, both connected to the scandal with Jack Abramoff.
The man in the black hat.
Yeah, right. Now, Jason Rowe left Congressman Feeney's staff to go to work for Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mitt Romney suddenly resigned, even though there's still plenty of time left in the campaign, just a couple of weeks ago. Interestingly, just before Congressman Renzi is served with these indictments
right.
for, again, fraud and a bunch of other malfeasance. So kind of interesting. Did Mitt know something was coming down and want to get out of the limelight? Yes, he was trailing John McCain, and it seemed unlikely he was going to catch him. But was there more to it than that? Just
well, I think so. And also, to go back to McCain, John McCain—
That's the other part of the story.
Exactly. He received, according to documents that, you know, I think are unimpeachable, he received $100,000 from Abramoff's old lobbying group, Greenberg Traurig,
mm-hmm.
T-R-A-U-R-I-G. And John McCain, the reason I bring this up in connection to Abramoff is because John McCain was on the Indian Affairs Committee, and that's the main thing that Abramoff was involved in. Now, he had lots of other things going mm-hmm. on, but what the Congress was actually looking at was his connection to unfair practices with regards to representing certain Indian groups mm-hmm. and payoffs to certain congresspeople regarding getting these casinos and things taken care of, approved. And the fact that McCain got $100,000 mm-hmm. from that lobbying group, it makes me just kind of wonder.
Yeah. To us, the big story regarding Vicky Eisman is not any potential impropriety or any possible impropriety that might have taken place between the two of them, even though that would be bad enough.
We think any sexual impropriety.
Any sexual impropriety.
Because the fact is, money changing hands is improper.
Right. And we think that's the big story that's being lost in this backlash coming from conservatives at the New York Times. What a bunch of scumbags. What a rag. What a tabloid. You know, listening to Rush Limbaugh, who has been very critical of John McCain, and the rest of the conservative punditocracy, or rather punditocracy, is following in suit and slamming the New York Times. But the story that really should be reported here is the fact that John McCain has surrounded himself with a campaign staff full of lobbyists.
Are you getting the picture here that we're not going to vote for John McCain?
So,
yeah. I don't trust him. I mean, I'm sorry. I do not trust him.
And I've read a number of stories about people behind the scenes. The stories that have come out, and I'm sure there are others that have not come out, but there's just the stories that have come out about his hair-triggered temper mm-hmm. and his tendency to blow his top and start cursing at his fellow senators mm-hmm. leads me to believe that this is a guy whose finger I do not want anywhere near the button.
No, not at all. In fact, he publicly said just a couple of days ago that he can't wait until Raul Castro.
Fidel.
Actually, I think he was happy about Raul, too. But he definitely wants Fidel Castro to say hello to Karl Marx
very soon.
In other words, he publicly wished a world leader dead. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, think what you want to in private, McCain. And frankly, I doubt that there are very many Americans that are crazy about Fidel Castro.
Right.
In fact, our government tried to take him out a number of times. But mm-hmm. to publicly say that is so irresponsible.
Sure. And again, to show what kind of a love fest the major media seems to have with Senator McCain, he was barely called out on that. Whereas when Pat Robertson made the statement that the mm-hmm. United States ought to take out Hugo Chavez, which was a despicable thing to say,
mm-hmm. I know.
He was roundly and rightly criticized
absolutely.
By all.
He should have been criticized.
Right. But Senator McCain should have been criticized.
He should have been
as well.
And you're right; it's a love fest for him. So I don't get it.
Well, we've got some weird things to talk about, and we'll get to those as we go through the program today. But staying with politics now, let's shift over to the left side of the column and talk about Senator Barack Obama, who survived a rather odd incident in Dallas this past Wednesday.
Oh my gosh! You go ahead and explain that. I know what you're talking about.
The security detail that was assigned to protect Senator Obama. And was checking people, checking bags, scanning people as they came into a stadium in Dallas Wednesday night, was told more than an hour before the senator was to get up and speak and address the crowd, was told by the Secret Service, the United States Secret Service, to stand down and just wave people through without checking their bags, without mm-hmm. checking them for any, any weapons. Now, the security officials were upset and concerned, and, mm-hmm. and the local police were a little concerned. But the Secret Service says, look, the lines were backing up out there. We needed to get people inside.
Mm-hmm. And, they looked like a nice group.
And they looked like a nice enough group. Now, this is doubly concerning, doubly bizarre, when you consider that this was in Dallas, Texas. Consider that Senator Obama has been officially, more or less, designated the heir apparent
He's
to the throne
of Camelot. He's been given the mantle of
Camelot.
Of the Kennedy clan.
Yes.
Exactly.
Ted Kennedy, Caroline Kennedy, basically endorsing Obama and, again, more or less designating him as the heir apparent mm-hmm. of the Kennedy dream, the legacy, Camelot, if you will. Mm-hmm. And there he is in Dallas addressing a crowd in a stadium, a setting not unlike that of the denouement, the culminating scenes in the movie The Manchurian Candidate.
Mm-hmm. Huh? I know.
And the Secret Service is telling security, don't bother to check for weapons.
No, they're not going to do anything. And well, praise the Lord, the man was safe. I mean, nothing did happen. But that sort of behavior from the Secret Service has to make you wonder, what is going on? And is Obama wearing a flak jacket all the time?
Thing that make you go, well, speaking of Senator Obama, though, we are not crazy about him either. I mean, he's certainly a charming man and an electrifying speaker, but He's
the kind of man that could fool the very elect if that were possible.
Yeah. Good point. And you may, if you do read peeringintodarkness.com, may have seen the pictures from his Houston campaign office with the Cuban flag featuring the picture of Che Guevara, the face of Che Guevara on it. That doesn't bother us so much as...
Oh, it does bother me, but...
Well, it does, yeah. But what bothers us even more, I think, is his long association with Reverend Jeremiah Wright, mm-hmm. of the
United Church of Christ, I think.
Yeah, in Chicago, Illinois. Reverend Wright is a proponent...
Liberation theology,
right, but specifically
it.
Black liberation theology.
Right.
Which essentially is a works-based theology, which... sort of hinges on the identity of the black of black people, mm-hmm. as victims, mm-hmm. and it's a very Afrocentric belief system. And we're doing a little more reading in it. We certainly don't profess to know specifically what he teaches and believes, but just the broad outlines.
No, he has endorsed Louis Farrakhan a couple of times.
He publishes a magazine, a newsletter, a magazine, I believe, from his church, and last year. Louis Farrakhan was basically the man of the year, mm-hmm. for his magazine. And if that doesn't send up a red flag for you, then you're just not paying attention. So that is something that concerns us, because unlike the actions of a campaign volunteer over which you can at least argue that you don't have control, where you choose to go to church is your choice and, mm-hmm. your decision. And the fact that Senator Obama has chosen to spend 21 years in the congregation of this Afrocentric pastor, mm-hmm. Says something about what Barack Obama believes. And so we find that rather disturbing and just wanted to put that out. We'll put some links to some of the things that we've been reading about Jeremiah Wright and his teachings in the show notes at PIDradio.com. And as long as we're on matters
of religion and
faith.
We don't like McCain. We don't like Obama.
Yeah.
Well, we don't like Clinton either, so...
Senator, who does that leave? Well, I suppose it leaves Mike
Huckabee. If he makes it.
If he makes it. But, you know, even
but
Mike
then
Huckabee.
Again, I know.
Well, we might as well toss this out there, too. It came out over the last week during an interview with Wolf Blitzer on CNN that one of Mike Huckabee's foreign policy advisors is, well, two of them, actually, Frank Gaffney, who's a pretty well connected to the neocons, and Richard Haass, who's the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the group that's really pushing for the North American Union to happen.
I know. In fact, I just wrote a piece at my website, SharonKGilbert.com, and it was basically saying that the Bilderbergers can tell you who may be the VP candidates this year. And that's one of the reasons that I essentially originally went to the Bilderberg site to get the list of the 2007 attendees, because I was curious to see if Huckabee had been.
Mm-hmm. Had not. But
no, he's not attended yet.
But let's talk a little bit about that piece, because I think your analysis is very insightful. And Sharon is going out on a limb here and predicting who she thinks the 2008 vice presidential candidates for the two major parties will be.
I think Kathleen Sebelius, who's the governor of Kansas, mm-hmm. and Rick Perry, the governor of Texas.
Okay. And why do you think so?
Well, both of them jumped on the bandwagon in late January to endorse their candidates. Rick Perry endorsing McCain and Sebelius endorsing Obama. Sebelius is a woman. Mm-hmm. Great way to counter the Hillary factor. And if Obama announces that candidate before the convention, I think that may help to sway some of the superdelegates to his side. Also, she and Rick Perry, let me just back up before I go there. Rick Perry, of course, governor of Texas, has been instrumental in helping to get the Trans-Texas Corridor, the NAFTA superhighway, mm-hmm. Approved, and he's been very active in that whole notion of North American Union. He's at a border state. Mm-hmm. He's Texas, which is a big state as far as presidents and vice presidents. And both he and Governor Sebelius attended the Bilderberg Conference last year.
Yeah. Now, of course, John Edwards is also a former Bilderberger. So
he
is Hillary Clinton.
He went there in 2004.
Barack Obama has not been at the Bilderberg Conference.
I didn't
as far
see
as
his name
know.
On the list. No.
So kind of an interesting
I know.
Dynamic
he seemed to come out
here.
Of nowhere.
Yeah, kind of an interesting dynamic here. But just bear in mind that people don't usually come out of nowhere without help. And it is significant to note that Barack Obama is raising far more money than John McCain even.
It's amazing. And I have to admit, he is charismatic. Mm-hmm. You and I watch his speeches because they're sort of, you know, like, we saw 7 minutes or 9 minutes of Hillary the other night, and suddenly Barack was starting to speak, and, oh, let's cut over and watch all 46 minutes of his speech.
Right. To his credit, Howard Kurtz of CNN on his Reliable Sources program on CNN Today, which is sort of a review of the media's news coverage of the previous week, Howard Kurtz criticized his network and Fox News and MSNBC for all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton getting 7 minutes of her speech and then Barack getting like 43.
Mm-hmm.
It was very slanted, very one-sided.
It really has been. The one thing also you and I have talked about is the Democrat National Convention, which is going to be, I think, in Denver. Is that it?
I should know
Denver,
that, and
Colorado.
I don't. I think you're right.
If it comes down to the superdelegates picking out the candidate, I think there's a really good chance that we could see a repeat of the Chicago riots that were at the Democratic National Convention that year. What was that, back in 68 or so?
68, yeah.
40 years ago.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah.
You're right, by the way, it is Denver, where the Democrats, the Republicans will be meeting in Minneapolis this year.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to do some homework and maybe some research to find out where the Libertarians, Greens, welcome back to Ralph Nader, the Constitution Party conventions are going to happen.
And will Ron Paul go third party? I mean, there's always that possibility, too.
I suppose.
I know he said
he's raised a lot of money, but
yeah.
He has said publicly that he will not and that he's concentrating now on winning his congressional seat again.
You even brought up an interesting point. Would Barack Obama go third party?
Because I don't believe that Hillary Clinton goes down without a fight. I mean, if you want to talk politics, Hillary Clinton is as gutsy.
Ruthless.
And ruthless. That's a better word. A backroom fighter as anyone out there.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens if they get to the convention and it comes down to what the candidate or what the delegates mm-hmm. decide to do at the convention. Hillary may well emerge as the nominee. I would not see her willing to take a vice presidential slot. Obama might under Hillary Clinton, but
possibly.
I don't see the reverse.
No,
place.
I don't either, and that's why I was going for Sebelius.
Yeah, because right now it looks like the momentum is all on Obama's side. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. The Ohio and Texas primaries are coming up this week, and at this point on February 24th, the polls show Hillary Clinton with a mm-hmm. small, although within the realm or within the range of statistical error, but a small lead in both of those states. Mm-hmm. Now, if she were able to pull off wins in both those states,
it would have to be a landslide win in both of those states.
Well,
for her to overcome the momentum that he's got.
That's true. That's true. But again, both of those states being very large and carrying a lot of delegates with them.
We've talked politics for over 20 minutes now. That's enough.
Yep. One thing we should get to, though, is some more of the nuts and bolts of the North American Union being put into place. We talked about that for just a moment.
That's not really politics, not in the sense of that whole
right, yeah, the dog and pony show.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Which, by the way, Vox Day wrote an interesting line about this whole thing, which I think deserves repeating. If pro wrestling looked this fake, no one would even watch. Referring to politics. So Northcom and our counterparts in...
I'm sorry, I was just flashing on Ted Kennedy singing the song.
Coming off the top rope.
I know. In tights. I don't even want to think about that. Nacho Kennedy.
Northcom and its military counterpart to the North.
I could not believe this story when I saw it.
Yep.
You know, I try to check in at the Northcom site about once a week. Well, I had sort of let it slide the last couple of weeks. I just peeked in there the other day, and there's a press release about how Northcom, U.S. Northern Command, and the Canada Command have gotten together, and they are going to support each other in case of national emergencies in either country. In other words, if we have a flood or Katrina-like occurrence or avian flu or any kind of a national emergency, tornadoes that require a response because Northcom, their duty is to respond to events like Katrina. And Canada will come down and help out. If there's something in Canada, Northcom will go up and help out there. In other words, posse comitatus, which is something that we've talked about a lot on this show, will no longer be a problem because they will be Canadian soldiers
right
on our soil.
Now, if you're not familiar with Posse Comitatus, the Posse Comitatus Act was passed by the United States Congress after and some years after the Civil War, the American Revolution, not the American Revolution, the war between the states, rather, because the United States military.
The war of aggression,
which side you're on. The United States military had been used to enforce civil law in the South for a number of years, and it was really causing problems. It was causing a lot of animosity and leading to a lot of unrest. And so Congress said, look, let's pass this law that says that the United States military cannot be used to enforce civil law. In other words, you can't use the Army as a police force. Now, that has been suspended a number of times in the past. In fact, the novel that I'm working on should have finished in the next couple of weeks. The God Conspiracy touches on this. Presidents McKinley, Woodrow Wilson, U.S. Grant basically suspended Posse Comitatus a number of times during their presidency. And actually, during Grant's reign, during Grant's administration, I don't think Posse Comitatus had been passed yet. But
during his reign.
During his reign, yeah. Sorry.
You were right the first time.
but McKinley, Woodrow Wilson, and one other president, maybe Grover Cleveland. But anyway,
president.
Yes, another unheard of president, perhaps Millard Fillmore, sent U.S. Army troops into various places. In Wilson's case in particular, he sent them into Colorado to put down a miner strike and told the Army, just arrest the troublemakers and refuse to honor any writs of habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another key thing that you might have heard the phrase thrown about. Habeas corpus simply means that if you're arrested by the police, you can present a writ of habeas corpus, which means basically they have to take you before a judge and present to a judge a reason why you've been arrested. In other words, you cannot...
Body of evidence or something like that?
Yes, produce the body, mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, it means that the United States... In the United States, the Constitution guarantees that you can't be arrested for no reason, okay? Now... The Posse Comitatus Act has been pretty strictly adhered to over the past, 130 years that it's been in effect, and I'm just guesstimating, with just a few exceptions. But again, if you want to get around the spirit of the law, while adhering to the letter of the law, this is a way to do it. Okay, we need to restore order to this area that's been devastated by flood, tornado, earthquake. We can't do it with American troops because of Posse Comitatus, so we'll just bring in Canadian troops and let them do it.
Now, of course, this story doesn't get into that at all.
No.
And truthfully, I think that the military men and women who are involved in NORTHCOM and in Canada Command are probably wonderful people.
Absolutely.
And I bet that they are wonderful people.
Absolutely.
You and I absolutely support the men and women who serve in the armed forces. Absolutely.
That is
but
true.
The decision makers at the top, and many of those decision makers are not military people.
No.
They're civilians.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making these choices that force men and women, oftentimes kids who are no older than 19, 20, 21, to go out and have to kill or at the very least order around sometimes little old ladies.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking about Katrina and the visions of Beck. It was not the Army in that case. They had Blackwater go down there.
Blackwater and other
That's going to segue us to another story.
Yeah, that'll lead us into our next story.
But anyway, that's what's going on. So North American Union, hey, it's happening.
Yep, absolutely. Now, that segue, Blackwater, not only takes us into another topic, but also overseas. We want to focus on Israel, the Middle East, and Jerusalem in particular for a while. Bizarre story coming out of the Middle East, which Sharon posted appearingintodarkness.com this week. It's been disclosed that Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas wants Blackwater USA to take over as his bodyguards.
Can you believe that?
Now...
Well, and actually, I think it's Blackwater International.
Division of Blackwater USA.
Exactly.
Right. But Blackwater is, like many of these other private contractors that are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, I would imagine if they're any kind of business people at all, which they would have to be to get these kind of government contracts, they're looking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do to open up new markets? What do we do for business if we actually stabilize Iraq or Afghanistan?
Exactly, which is why Blackwater International, I think, arose. Because Blackwater USA, it's kind of tough to sell that to people. Yeah, Blackwater USA, we're going to work for you guys over the Palestinians. That makes sense.
Yeah. So needless to say, some members of Mahmoud Abbas's cabinet, his Fatah party officials, are not in favor of this proposal. But what's interesting about this is that you and I, as American taxpayers, this may actually be a better deal. I don't know, depending on where the money comes from. So far, you and I have spent, and I say this as collective Americans, about $86 million.
Feels like it came out of our pockets.
Yeah, yeah, and we're sick about it. $86 million to train and equip the Palestinian Authority's security forces.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a discussion that I had with Aaron Klein, who's WorldNet Daily's Jerusalem correspondent, last fall.
Is that podcast still available?
Yes, I'm going to link to that because I think you need to hear it. Had the opportunity to talk with him from Jerusalem, and he's got a book out called Schmoozing with Terrorists, in which he documents how that money that American taxpayers are sending over to the Middle East to train Fatah's bodyguards and security forces in Jordan,
mm-hmm,
is actually being diverted to groups like the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade for use in homicide bombings. So, I mean, it just is so insane that it, as Glenn Beck would say, makes your head want to explode. You know, you have to duct tape your head to keep it from exploding.
Well, just the figure alone, $86 million, that sounds like a ridiculously high price tag to train some guards.
Bodyguards and police forces.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know.
I'm betting the local police forces here in the United States would love to have money like that.
I'd say that there are probably some roads and bridges that could be repaired with $86
million. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd go pretty quick, but this is just another example of American tax money that's being sent overseas to fiddle with the politics of other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this may be just a drop in the bucket compared to what we're spent in Iraq, but you start adding up other things like the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute, the International Democratic, whatever. Each of the two main political parties has its own NGO, mm-hmm, funded by the National Endowment for Democracy specifically to set up political parties in other countries. I mean, come on. Why are we spending money to finance political parties in other countries? Well, I know why. Because we want them
because our businesses want to do business there. Corporations,
right, yeah,
have things they want to do there. There are gas reserves and oil reserves and who knows what else. We may even want to put some missiles there.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, looks like Blackwater may soon take over the role of guarding the prime minister of the Palestinian Authority, or president of the Palestinian Authority, rather. But while that's going on, We're seeing stories coming out of Jerusalem, again, not being reported at all in the American media, that there have been back-channel negotiations between the government of Ehud Olmert in Israel and not Mahmoud Abbas, but apparently wealthy Palestinians.
A wealthy Palestinian, and actually it's been Livni, who's the foreign minister, who's been having these talks. And when pressed by the ministers there in Israel to fess up to what she's doing on the QT, she will not say.
Mm-hmm.
She simply says that, if I understand it correctly, the last time she was asked, her response was that the deal that was made in Annapolis?
Yes.
At Annapolis, the most recent version of the roadmap, mm-hmm, is that any intermediate negotiations are not to be announced.
Yeah. And what is being discussed here is the permanent division of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
The permanent division of Jerusalem. The Palestinians to gain control permanently of Jerusalem as part of a new Palestinian state.
Mm-hmm.
Not only Foreign Minister Livni, but Vice Premier Ramon apparently involved in this negotiation with a wealthy Palestinian named Mohammed Rashid. Don't know what connection he has to Palestinian Authority, why the negotiations are taking place with him. The Olmert government is denying this officially. But again, going back to Aaron Klein, WorldNet Daily's reporter in Jerusalem, he wrote 2 years ago, March of 2006, that the Olmert government said publicly, as part of its platform, and this was before, mm-hmm, the elections that brought his party to power following the stroke.
Because Ariel Sharon,
yes,
had a stroke, that's in quotey marks.
Right. This was that new party, the Kadima party that split off from Likud, which was headed by Ariel Sharon, and then, mm-hmm, he suffered a stroke. Olmert took over as the head of the party, was elected. They announced in March of 2006, we will divide Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing this this promise and apparently these negotiations taking place. Now, how does that fit into a Christian's understanding of end time prophecy?
Well, I think, first of all, the Lord God, Jehovah, is looking at that and saying, not my town. You're not dividing my town.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a very interesting development to watch. And it's just one of the many things that the reasons we feel compelled to do this program, because we watch the news to see what's going on, but also to find out what they want us to think. But we just don't see this story or many other stories of importance that are being breaking through the nightly handicapping at of what's happening in the American presidential race.
I love the talking heads. They say things like, "Well, if Hillary can't win here, she's just not going to win, is she?"
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's going to come down to this. She's either going to win or she won't.
Yeah. And you know,
you just think, you're getting paid for this, aren't you?
Yeah. So you're saying then that if Hillary gets more votes than Barack Obama, she's got a good chance of winning?
Well, I'd like to go ahead and say that, Derek, but I just can't. I don't want to go on the record with that. Gosh.
So we're watching what's happening there in Jerusalem and
by the
Israel.
Way, we did have an earthquake over there in Israel.
Yes.
We had snow in Israel. We've had an earthquake that actually was epicentered up in Lebanon.
Southern Lebanon, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting because Syria, certain factions within Lebanon, Egypt, the Palestinians, of course, Iran. Who else is in there? It's like the Gog-Magog Confederation is just pulling together.
Mm-hmm.
And Iran came right out in Syria, and they just said that they I can't take credit for this. We saw Hal Lindsey talking about this, and he said that they had claimed that they were going to cause an earthquake to happen in Israel.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Ahmadinejad has come right out and said he's going to wipe Israel off the map.
Right.
And, of course, it was just the very next day, if I remember the dates right, that there was an earthquake, not in Israel, but in Lebanon. And the only damage in Israel, there were a couple of places. One of them had to do with an area where an actual terrorist cell was, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was, it was the oddest thing. There was a hole. It was almost as if the hole had been uncovered at the Temple Mount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really interesting. We know that there have been all kinds of excavations being done in and around the Temple Mount, looking for official confirmation that this is the site of Solomon's Temple, and other archaeological finds. There's some speculation that the Ark of the Covenant is buried somewhere there at the Temple Mount, but it is interesting that this hole just sort of appeared there, the only place in Israel, basically, aside from that one other spot, but basically the only place in Israel, the only place in Jerusalem anyway, where there was any damage from this particular earthquake, right there on the Temple Mount, right at next to the Dome of the Rock.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, you know, I don't know how far afield from where you're going to go next to, but while we are talking about earthquakes, there have been a number of earthquakes around the world lately. And one of them was, it was originally reported as a 6.3 quake in Nevada, in an area of Nevada that's not really been active geologically. Because I looked at this big map of all of the mapped earthquakes. It was from a college site, and I wish I could tell you which one, but I can't remember right offhand. The area up, it was up in the northeast corner of Nevada where this took place, on what I think is government land.
You know, but more than 80% of Nevada is government land.
I know. I know.
You've got
exactly.
Area 51 all the way through Area 2008, I think.
And poor Nevada, they just it just seemed to come out of nowhere.
It was kind of bizarre.
I know, and they had a number of aftershocks after that. We've also had the South Sandwich Islands region. They had a 6.8. Indonesia's had a 6.4.
Mm-hmm.
That was today. And they've had a number of aftershocks since then. The Baja area Baja California, which is actually part of Mexico, as I understand it, that's
like
been ringing now for a while.
Mm-hmm.
As Jesus said, as we approach the very, very last days before his return, we would see an increase in the number of earthquakes. We would see an increase in wars and rumors of wars. And, you know, with all the weird weather that we've had going on, you know, there would be signs in the heavens. And I'll tell you what, they're there.
Yeah, signs in the heavens. Of course, we had that comet that exploded just a couple of months ago. Speaking of wars and rumors of wars, of course, this past week, Turkey invaded Iraq.
They sent 10,000 troops, ground troops, mm-hmm. with air support into northern Iraq.
And again, is this a story that you are seeing at all in your cable news shows?
No.
It's all about,
and what amazes
does Michelle
me is
Obama
they,
really love America?
And it wasn't one of those. They've skirmished off and on for the last couple of years. But it wasn't one of those. It was Erdogan said, we will stay there until our goal is accomplished.
Yeah. Now, the United States has designated the PKK, which is the terror group that Turkey says it's chasing down, as a terrorist organization. However, the Turks and the Kurds and the Iranians have not gotten along for a long, long time. What the Turks do not want, of course the Kurds do, is an independent Kurdistan on its southern border. Now, recall that Secretary of State Condi Rice called that area Kurdistan.
Mm-hmm. I know, she did.
Which we think was kind of a faux pas. She didn't really mean to say it, but I think it was very insightful, very illuminating, by the way. Kurdistan on its southern border with all of that oil in and around the Mosul and Kirkuk region, which would, you know, basically make it a viable state. It would provide enough revenue to make it a viable state. So we're watching that to see what happens. We've noted over the past year a couple of incursions by Iranian forces into northeastern Iraq, chasing down what they claimed were Kurdish terrorists. Mm-hmm. While that is all going on, of course, speaking of Iran, it has finally opened the oil bourse that we've been talking about off and on for the last couple of years.
And they're trading in reals.
Rather than U.S. dollars.
That's their currency, right, reals?
Yes. I think
so.
Let
me make sure that I'd remember. You've got notes. I'm talking off the top of my head here.
My notes just say Iran oil bourse. That's all it says.
But what I find interesting is that Ahmadinejad said that he would trade in whatever stable currency people want to use. In other words, anything but dollars.
And the dollar has sort of been the de facto currency, the de facto currency of anyone, nation.
That petroleum has backed our dollar.
Right.
It's the primary reason that our dollar has remained stable at all.
Yeah. After President Nixon in 1972 finally said, you know, look, we are not going to honor any requests to redeem dollars and gold. Mm-hmm. Forget it. It is now a fiat currency. It is no longer backed by any hard by any metals, no solid, collateral. Mm-hmm. So what happened then is that the New York and London oil exchanges required all transactions to be made in U.S. dollars. Well, the Iranians on the island of Kish have opened an oil bourse. There are dozens of oil companies that are based on Kish, or at least have offices on Kish, that can buy and sell contracts there in whatever currency they want. Mm-hmm. Now, is this more than a pinprick, a thorn in the side of the United States? Is it a real threat to the United States dollar? Don't know.
Well, we don't really know. I have seen rumors, though, that OPEC has said that they would cease using dollars.
If that were to happen,
it would be huge.
Yeah.
Now, that would really surprise me if they do that, because we are a big customer.
Yeah. But, if they've got it and we need it, and they say, look, we're not going to take U.S. dollars anymore. You're going to have to give it to us in reals or whatever the Saudi currency is, dinars.
Yeah.
Then that's what we'll have to do, I suppose.
Hey, you know, speaking of that, let me just make this point. I've heard it said a number of times over the last few weeks that as the supply of oil goes up and down, it seems to have a direct relationship as to the consumption of oil, of gas. In other words, if we stop buying as much gas, suddenly there's more available and the price goes down.
That's the theory.
That's actually been happening the past few weeks, because Americans are not buying as much gas as we have in the past. And I don't think it's because suddenly we got more efficient engines.
No.
I think it's because we are tightening our belts, and we're, you know, I know I do this, and I bet a lot of other people do the same thing. Okay, I have to do 5 or 6 different runs to run errands this week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do them all in one trip. I'm not going to start up my car and drive out five different days this week. Other people can carpool. In other words, what I'm saying, if you want to help bring the price of gasoline down, stop buying as much.
Mm-hmm.
Find ways, you know, if you own two cars, just use one.
Mm-hmm. It's inconvenient, but that's the only way it's going to result in any change. Mm-hmm. Is if we take steps to change the way we live, we may see a trend back towards smaller vehicles. You know, let's face it, gasoline got so cheap for so long there mm-hmm. during the 90s. And because of the inflationary economy that was being run up by Alan Greenspan and the Fed creating cheap credit everywhere, a lot of us went out and bought bigger and bigger cars until, mm-hmm. you know, the status symbol was the suburban soccer mom SUV getting, you know, 15 miles to the gallon. Back in the early 70s, we were driving a lot of big American cars that got 8, 9, 10 miles a gallon. And when the price of oil quadrupled or quintupled mm-hmm. or whatever it was in 74, well, I know that was about the time that we quit driving our car and bought
and,
a little Subaru.
And a lot of people
went to
small
Subaru.
VWs and Subarus right. and cars like that.
And that's when Subarus
and
Toyotas.
And the speed limit came down.
And suddenly small cars became all the rage.
Yeah.
So we may see more of that. We may see more of that as we
So if you feel like you have no say in it, you can find ways. Not only will it help you because you're not buying as much gas, but I do think that if everybody in the United States did that, mm-hmm. let's find ways to economize on the gas we're buying. Then I think that the sellers, those who sell it over at, in the Middle East, OPEC, and the middlemen, the companies over here, Chevron and Exxon and all mm-hmm. of those, they'd have to do something. Whoa, we've got to keep our phony baloney jobs here. Get a bike. Ride a bicycle.
And what's really frustrating, though, is knowing that on this continent, between the oil that's available in the shales of the Rocky Mountains, mm-hmm. eastern Montana, western North Dakota, and off the north slope of Alaska, we've got, oh, gosh, we've got, you know, I'm trying to remember the actual amount of estimated reserves, especially just under that Rocky Mountain formation. I think it was something like twice as much as Saudi Arabia's, which is not an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. You know, at least, again, that's based on the estimate.
But shale oil used to be expensive to extract.
Used to be expensive, but when you
not
get above,
anymore.
Yeah, $15 to $18 a barrel is what I was told by guys in the business back when I was selling steel pipe. When it got above $15 to $18 a barrel, then it became, you know, profitable.
Economically profitable.
And we're well above that mark right now.
So. Yes.
The fact is, the oil is there on this continent if we chose to exploit it. But we'd rather, you know, control what's coming out of the ground in the Middle East, in Central Asia, because that controls what other people get to use.
Yeah.
It's a big game, and you and I are financing it. And that's the name of that tune. Getting to some of the weird stuff in the last segment here, some of the unusual things that we've not really found explanations for.
Well, snow store in Jerusalem and Greece isn't weird enough.
Well, that is pretty weird. That is pretty weird. But what's also very weird is the fact that apparently no one has seen a jackrabbit at Yellowstone National Park in something like 16 years.
Isn't that odd?
No jackrabbits in Yellowstone National Park.
I mean, come on, jackrabbits. Well, they go at it like rabbits.
Like jackrabbits.
Like bunnies.
So what could possibly have caused the disappearance of the rabbits? And this wasn't something that I ever expected to read, but what really struck me was that it's not like a new event. It's in the course of reading this article, you learn that they haven't seen a jackrabbit, at Yellowstone since 1991. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is it now? 16 years later, we're just, oh, hey, by the way, we just checked the records and found. So what could be causing the rabbits to disappear?
Well, I guess you could say a couple of things. One, maybe more predators. I suppose that's a possibility.
Yeah, yeah. Now that the wolves, by the way, are now taken off the endangered list.
Yeah. But more than that, I would say they're underground. You know, rabbits live in burrows underneath the ground for the most part, and they're low to the ground. So if there are gaseous emissions coming out of some of those fault lines,
right,
I would say that the rabbits might be the first to go.
It's possible, or among the first anyway. Now,
yeah,
bear in mind that we have talked in the past about the caldera, the super volcano kind of bubbling underneath Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is a bulge that has risen. I've not checked on any news stories about this lately, but I know that a year or 2 years ago, we were doing a lot of research into the caldera there.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a bulge in the bottom of Lake Yellowstone that had been rising fairly significantly. So, and there were parts of Yellowstone National Park where it had suddenly gotten really hot. The vegetation had died, and the parts of the park had been roped mm-hmm. off to visitors.
You know, which is one of the reasons, frankly, that I took a hard look at the Nevada event, because there are there's shaking going on in parts of the United States that you may not necessarily expect. That Nevada event in Northeast Corner, that really – and that was a pretty sizable earthquake. There were a few in relatively sizable in California. And, of course, we talked about the one a few minutes ago, the Baja California of Mexico area. But also there are some volcanoes along that whole ring of fire. There are some volcanoes going off, the Aleutian Islands up near Alaska. They've been going off lately. We've had Indonesia going off. And you don't hear this in the news very often, but the fact is that Mount St. Helens has had a continual eruption now going on for the past year or more.
Mm-hmm. What they're calling drumbeat earthquakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you start thinking of things like that, you know, rhythmic earthquakes taking place, you begin to think of the phrase birth pangs.
Yes, exactly.
Got some prophetic significance.
Exactly. So I think take close examination of what's going on. And you mentioned odd things that are taking place, and I don't know if this was one of the things you were going to get to, but there was a story. There have been stories of dead birds and dead fish.
Mm-hmm.
Where was it that they saw all those dead fish? Off the coast of Taiwan?
I think it was Taiwan.
I think it was Taiwan. It was something like 500 tons of dead fish.
Yeah, we had a very nice discussion about how many truckloads.
We never did decide how many truckloads
it would take to
haul off 500 tons of dead fish, but a lot.
Yeah, so you've got those fish. The dead birds took place here in Indiana.
In Indiana.
Which, incidentally, was not long after there was a story that just to the west and south of here, from Indianapolis south to about Evansville, there were a number of reports.
There was this of weird,
a weird
smell.
Yeah, rotting egg smell, sulfur.
Kind of a weird,
you know, and sulfur might not have been the word you used.
I did. And some of the reports said actually sulfur.
Sulfurs, okay.
Yeah.
So, so we had that going on. In Indiana, and then here a few days later, these birds just sort of dropping out of the sky. Okay, possibly the victims of a poison bait type of control effort to control starlings or something like that, but no official explanation of that. And then, as long as we're talking, about bizarre, or rather ominous signs, comes word from Canada that the influenza virus has mutated into a form now that is resistant to Tamiflu, which was supposed to be the miracle drug, the miracle antiviral to save us all when the big influenza
I know, but if you remember the reports, Tamiflu was never really designed for H5N1.
No, not for H5N1. It was designed to fight influenza A and influenza B, which is an H1
right.
virus.
But they thought it might give you some protection
against H5, but the Tamiflu or the virus has mutated in Canada, and this is now the 10th country which has reported a Tamiflu resistant mm-hmm. influenza
exactly.
virus.
Exactly.
These are the H1 viruses that are mutating now to a form that Tamiflu can't control. And just two years ago, we were reporting on all of these nations that were just stocking up and placing huge orders with Roche, the pharmaceutical mm-hmm. company, for Tamiflu. Roche was, had orders for the next 3 years it wouldn't be able to mm-hmm. fill, and countries like the UK, the United States, other nations putting in these orders to mm-hmm. prepare against a sudden outbreak. And yet, and here's the other thing that really is annoying, the major media still doesn't recognize that Tamiflu is not a vaccine. They're using the word vaccine and antiviral interchangeably.
I know.
Bear in mind, antivirals like Tamiflu are designed to be taken after you get sick to make you better. They're not a vaccine.
A vaccine is to keep you from getting sick.
Right. Tamiflu is not a vaccine. And we wish the major media would at least do enough homework to figure that out. But the bottom line is that this drug, again, developed by Searle, and for which Donald Rumsfeld, when he sold his Searle stock, made, about $5 million?
Oh, he made a bunch of money off that.
The drug apparently now is being outwitted by by the mutant strains of influenza, mm-hmm. which are now apparently in at least 7 or 8% of the cases not responding to treatments with Tamiflu.
Really quickly, a sort of a corollary story. We had the recall of how much beef?
Oh, a lot. tons.
Yeah, a lot of beef that was recalled. Here's an interesting story. I didn't even tell you about this. You know how the USDA recalled that beef because it was coming from a plant that was allowing cows to go through that were downers.
Mm-hmm. Cows that couldn't walk. They were so
exactly.
Sick.
The fear was that there was mad cow disease. Mm-hmm. The USDA said in their own statement that any commingling of the meat from that plant mm-hmm. with meat from other plants was okay.
What?
You don't have to recall. In other words, if you have
– if you made sausage.
If it's 100%
yeah.
that meat, that's no good. Got to recall that. And, in fact, they took several months to recall it.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder how much of that meat was even still – you know, how much had already been consumed.
Uh-huh.
But if you bought some meat from that place and mixed it with some meat from another place and maybe had 10% – evil meat, 90% non-evil meat, then it's okay. I'm sorry, but if you have got prions in any of that meat,
yeah.
then you don't want to commingle with it. You don't want any of it.
And what's really disturbing about this story is that this particular plant and the company that supplied meat from this particular plant with the sick cows was selling it to schools to be served in school lunch mm-hmm. programs. Doesn't that disturb you? Meanwhile, let's see, another death near Bridge End, but this was
We talked about that with Russ, actually, that 17th victim.
No, this was the man who was struck by a train rather than a hanging victim.
You know, they're not including him, but I think people ought to take a look at those two train deaths.
Yeah. This was a man in his 50s who was struck by a train near Bridge End. A 23-year-old man was killed by a train on the line at the same station
just
about 2 weeks ago. And again, this is Bridge End, where so many young people have hanged themselves in recent weeks. So we just touch on that. Don't know if there's any connection there, but it seems like an odd coincidence. And sorry, we're just not very good coincidence theorists.
No, we're not. Hey, I want to ask one favor of our listeners. Anybody who lives in California in an area where they're going to be doing spraying for that brown moth, the brown apple moth?
Yes.
Let us know what's going on, because our understanding is the Checkmate is a pheromone-based pesticide that's being used, has not been tested as an aerial spray. It has not been tested on humans.
Mm-hmm.
There are many ingredients in that spray that can cause multiple health problems and possibly endocrine and reproductive problems in humans. My understanding, too, is that it is being sprayed not in the agricultural areas, but in cities.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of this is to help the farmers. So if you live in California in an area where it's being sprayed, please let me know, because I'd like to talk to you about it.
Yeah, it was a... this is a story that we just started checking into today.
I just found out about it today.
Yeah, and rather than go out there with a lot of misinformation, we would just like to find out, you know, what you, if you're in California, might know about this. But we're going to continue to do more reading on this, because it appears, just from a glance, looking in from the outside here on the 39th parallel in the Midwest, to be a bad idea.
Yeah, but chemtrails don't exist.
No, absolutely
gosh.
Not. If you've got any comments about the stories we talked about today, questions or news ideas, story ideas, we welcome those. Please send us an email. You can reach me at Derek@peeringintodarkness.com.
You can send me a note at Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com. You know, we are going to be talking to a guy you talked with out in Columbia, Missouri, when you were at the Eagle 93.1. We were going to have him this weekend. Our schedules didn't mesh, so we're praying that in the next week or two that we'll be able to talk with him. And hey, can you tell him a little bit about him?
Well, Jason Offit is a newspaper reporter, a columnist. He's also a journalism instructor, but he's also been a longtime follower of the paranormal, and he writes a weekly column called From the Shadows. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Very insightful, because he writes it from a journalistic standpoint. He's not trying to sell a particular point of view. He's working on a book. Now, he's got one book out right now, which is about haunted places in Missouri, called Haunted Missouri. But he's working on a book about ghosts, and specifically shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be interviewing some people whose names you know, for research for this book.
Exactly.
So we'll be talking to Jason Offutt in the very near future about the paranormal, specifically the phenomenon shadow people. And that should be really, really interesting.
Well, we're going long, so we better go.
Anytime you want to discuss, follow the link to the forum. And meanwhile, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Cutting-edge news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.